Good morning, everyone. Can I begin by echoing Patrick's welcome to you all? I have to say it's great to see such a strong interest in what is a very important and a very real issue for women in Northern Ireland. The briefing being launched today catalogues the many barriers that women face in accessing abortion services in Northern Ireland and is the culmination of research interviews conducted between November of 2014 and January of 2015 in Northern Ireland and England by Amnesty International's International Secretariat and our Northern Ireland office. We interviewed sexual and reproductive healthcare providers, civil society, women's rights groups and academics to hear their views on the issue of access to abortion for women and girls living here. We interviewed three women who have had first-hand experience of our highly restrictive abortion regulations and also received written testimony through service providers and NGOs of six other cases. Now, before I take you through the key headline strands of our report, let me say very clearly from the outset that our laws are utterly draconian and the criminal penalties attached to these are among the harshest in Europe. Life imprisonment for women undergoing an unlawful abortion and for anyone assisting her. That sentence even applies in pregnancies where there are fatal abnormalities, where there's no compatibility with life, and where women have been raped or are victims of incest. That grim distinction with the rest of Europe should be a wake-up call to our politicians. Abortions are, as we know, only lawful in extremely restricted circumstances, namely where there is a risk to a woman's life or a real and serious long-term or permanent damage to her physical and mental health. In practice, the law is even more restrictive. For many women, demonstrating a long-term risk to health, particularly mental health, and overcoming the barriers to accessing abortion in Northern Ireland is often an insurmountable challenge. The shameful lack of political action by some on this key issue has helped to create a climate of fear for our medical professionals. At least 1,000 women are forced to leave Northern Ireland every year just to access healthcare to which they are and should be entitled. Travel only adds to the trauma that women experience. Our laws are in urgent need of reform. In recent months, the Department of Justice has embarked on a process of consultation to reform our laws in cases of lethal fetal abnormalities and sexual crime. And while this initiative is a positive step toward, in principle, towards removing criminal sanction for access in reproductive health care, the underlying stigma around abortion and the lack of legal clarity from the Department of Health for medical providers on the circumstances in which abortion is permitted continues to have a damaging impact on women's rights. Lack of political will to recognise, promote and protect women's sexual and reproductive rights is a significant barrier for women here. Until the Department of Justice consultation, there appeared to be little political appetite for positively reforming our laws in Northern Ireland. In fact, to the contrary, very recently there have been proactive attempts among some political parties to further limit access to abortion in Northern Ireland through the introduction of increased legal restrictions. In addition to the chilling effect the criminal regulation continues to exert over healthcare providers and women and girls, a lack of abortion guidance from the Department of Health clarifying the law has given rise to a widespread reluctance amongst healthcare providers to provide abortion services which are lawful in Northern Ireland. The courts have found doctors have expressed unwillingness in some instances on the basis of medical professionals' perceived uncertainty as to the law governing abortion here. The Family Planning Association has led the charge in litigating and campaigning for the publication by the Department of Health of guidance on medical practices relating to abortion and the provision of abortion services. Since 2001, the FPA has challenged the Department of Health through judicial review proceedings to publish official guidance for our medical professionals here, which eventually was won in 2004, 11 years ago, and still there is no guidance. In 2013, the then Health Minister published revised draft guidelines for consultation. For those of us who thought, great, we finally have the beginnings of a long overdue court-ordered document which will help the medical profession and therefore women. How wrong we were. Amnesty International and several other bodies criticised the document on a number of fronts, including that it reinforced a climate of fear and the threat of prosecution to the medical profession, rather than being an enabling document which effectively clarified the law here. Professor Jim Dornan, a retired obstetrician, has gone on the record to state that the 2013 guidelines were particularly offensive to those of us who have been providing this very sensitive service for over 40 years. They said that any healthcare worker, including non-clinical healthcare workers, if they suspected that something illegal was going on in their unit, they must report it to the PSNI or risk 10 years in jail. Professor Dornan added, emphasised the very real chilling effect of unclear guidelines coupled with criminal regulation of healthcare, which meant that, and I quote, some of the trusts went to their legal teams at that stage and were advised to stop giving advice on what to do in these situations. The damaging and negative impact of these draft guidelines should not be underestimated. It is for this and other reasons that we now have what we are terming a postcode lottery in Northern Ireland when trying to access abortion services. Audrey Simpson from the Family Planning Association, Dawn Purvis from Mary Stopes and Brady Hughes of the Royal College of Midwives all stated that there are significant divides within Northern Ireland, notably on rural, urban and east-west axes for women seeking abortions. All three suggested, based on their professional experience, that women and girls seen in some parts of the north were more likely to be able to access abortion permitted under local law than women in other areas. The barriers and rights infringements arising from this postcode lottery and the resulting delays while a woman is first seen by one trust, referred to another, and then sent back to the original trust can have a seriously damaging impact on the health and life of the pregnant woman and push some pregnant women beyond time limits for abortion under the law. This brings me to the issue of travel to access abortion services and how this acts as an additional barrier for women here. With no guidance and no pathway into the NHS, each year between 1,000 and 2,000 women and girls have little option but to consider to travel elsewhere, sometimes accompanied by a partner, supportive family member or friend, sometimes with no one at all because they can't afford it, to access abortion services. They often don't know where to begin with making arrangements, given that there is little public discourse about clinics providing services to women from here, and sources of financial support for women who cannot afford either the journey or the treatment. The costs associated with travelling and paying for services on a private basis are often insurmountable. Most women in the North or Northern Ireland who require access to abortion services, unlike residents of GB who can access them where they live, have to incur considerable expenses for services in another part of the UK or another country. Women and families without the funds to arrange travel have limited sources from which to seek funding or accommodation while in England. Abortion Support Network, and I'm delighted that we have Mara Clark, the Director of Abortion Support Network, here today, is a widely used source of such assistance at the moment. But as well as the cost, stigma and stereotyping are also cause for significant concern. In their intent and purpose, criminal abortion laws conscript women into a gender-stereotyped reproductive role, perpetuating stigma. Experiences of sadness, shame, guilt and being judged by others arose repeatedly in our discussions with women and girls of those who were trying to obtain advice relating to abortion, to travel to access abortion and returning to Northern Ireland after accessing an abortion. For those who are from marginalised communities, there are additional barriers still. But abortion stigma is not just an amalgamation of intangible expressions of deeply held and pervasive set of socio-cultural beliefs and practices. Abortion stigma also finds expression in regular public demonstrations and in some instances, harassment. Outside sexual and reproductive health clinics, and takes the form of both veiled and open threats to healthcare providers working in these organisations and the women who use their services. Without exception, the interviewees recounted instances in which they had been harassed by anti-choice activists. Some also recounted instances in which women and girls visiting their premises, both to access abortion advice and for other reasons, and in some instances, women visiting other organisations in the same building, had been pursued down the street by anti-choice activists and harassed. Those providing services to pro-choice organisations, such as a hotel, have also been targeted. Service providers have also been the subject of official complaints by anti-choice activists to the police, resulting in intimidating police investigations. Now, I mentioned earlier the recognised grounds in our law for abortion and how this excludes fetal-fetal abnormality, rape and incest. An independent poll conducted by Millward Brown Ulster in 2014 found strong public support for changes to our abortion laws in these cases, 69% for women who have been raped, 68% for girls and women who are victims of incest, and 60% for fetal-fetal abnormalities. And it's interesting to note that whilst politically sexual crime is perceived to be the most contentious, the public are very clear in their support for access to abortion in these cases. In its consultation, the Department of Justice has acknowledged that the story of Sarah Yurt, along with that of another family who were expecting twins, where both fetuses were diagnosed with anencephaly, as a precipitating factor for the consultation, which was launched in 2014. The consultation process is restricted to examining whether the criminal law regulating abortion should enable abortion in cases where there are lethal abnormalities, and whether abortion should be available to women who become pregnant as a result of sexual crime. It explicitly stated that it was not about, nor would it entertain, responses setting out broader positions for and against abortion. And this narrow approach to potentially expanding the permissible grounds reflects the limited political will and lack of consensus across the board for wider change in line with public opinion. From our research and leading studies, women invariably experience a diagnosis of fetal impairment differently, depending on a number of factors and circumstances. Nevertheless, there is a commonality. Women experience a traumatic and devastating loss. Reactions to diagnosis include intense anger, loneliness and hopelessness. Women experienced deep grief for multiple losses, loss of their child, loss of the joys of a normal pregnancy experience being just some. And against these circumstances, the criminal prohibition on abortion perpetuates their suffering as it prolongs a traumatic and devastating sense of loss by forcing a woman to endure pregnancy with the full knowledge that it will ultimately end in death rather than life. Many women have described to us that this experience is a near unbearable state of being. And moreover, criminalisation denies women the empathetic compassion of a health provider in the face of their profound tragedy. Unlike fetal-fetal impairment, the Department of Justice makes no specific recommendations for legislative change in cases of sexual crime. Instead, it seeks views on whether and how the law ought to be changed. All of the reproductive and sexual health service providers that we spoke to and were interviewed for this in Northern Ireland and in England related their experiences of addressing the needs of women who had become pregnant as a result of rape and incest, and some raised cases where women were forced to continue with pregnancies in a situation of domestic violence. Violence against women is a violation of fundamental human rights, including the right to life, health and the right to be free from torture and other ill treatment. UN treaty bodies widely agree that abortion should be legal when a pregnancy results from rape and have repeatedly urged countries to amend their laws to this effect. They have also urged states to take measures to provide for implementation mechanisms to ensure availability and accessibility of abortion services in cases of rape and incest grounds, and also to adopt relevant medical standards. Women here are being denied these rights. So I'd like, before I conclude, just to show you some of the quotes which are featured in the report, which I think really bring to life what we are talking about this here. This is not an academic or abstract discussion. This is real lives. These are real women who are facing these circumstances. So Aoife from County Down, and we've just used her first name, who had an abortion when she was 17 years old, said that my guilt and shame was not about my decision to have an abortion. It was because society had made me feel like I was a fallen woman, dirty and criminal. That shame, that stigma, was the most damaging part of my experience. Not being able to say a word in case I outed myself as some sort of perceived murderer. My silence was suffocating. This is a quote from our Attorney General, who has, in the Justice Committee, took the opportunity to remind that abortion in Northern Ireland is a criminal offence, which is punishable by a maximum sentence of life imprisonment. That's how we treat our women here. Life imprisonment for a healthcare service. A 25-year-old student, originally from London, living in County Antrim, who had to travel to England for an abortion, had this to say: I felt like a criminal, having to do all the travel in secret. It seems silly, but I felt that the airport staff would recognise me. I wanted to take my partner, but we couldn't afford it, and our boys needed him here. I didn't want to have to do it alone. I should have been able to come home after it to my boys. And a woman from Northern Ireland who travelled with the assistance of Abortion Support Network to England to terminate a pregnancy where there were fetal abnormalities said this: my husband and I have been trying for years to get pregnant. I've had two miscarriages and we were so excited when we finally fell pregnant. However, we have had antenatal testing and the baby has severe fetal malformations and may not live until birth and certainly won't live for long after if it's born alive at all. This is completely breaking both our hearts, and because of this backwards country we live in, we have nowhere to turn. At the hospital, they wouldn't even talk to us about abortion. They just kept saying, if you choose to travel, as if we were planning a holiday. It makes this situation even more difficult. And this from Mara Clark of Abortion Support Network. The women who have contacted us have ranged in age from 51 to 13, and they literally have every imaginable circumstance. Either they are young teens, or they are mothers with children. They are married, they are not married, their pregnancies have been diagnosed with fetal anomalies, they are pregnant as a result of rape. What they have in common is that they are pregnant, they don't want to be pregnant, or in the case of fetal anomaly, the pregnancy has become untenable. And above all, the women who contact us here are poor. In 1,000 years, they never would have thought they would have needed to involve strangers in England in their personal decision to have an abortion. And I'll skip that just after the conclusion. So to conclude, our laws are draconian. They significantly fall short of the standards required by the UK's international human rights obligations. And this report details the many barriers that women face to access these services. The barriers include our severely restricted laws, which include the threat of criminal sanction, limited political will to legislate for change, deep underlying stigma and stereotyping, a lack of comprehensive sexuality education, and the financial costs and additional burdens of travelling to another jurisdiction to access abortion services. Healthcare providers and women and girls attending reproductive and sexual health clinics face regular harassment, and medical professionals lack clear guidance on abortion despite a court-ordered judgment ordering the Department of Health to publish such a document. Despite a significant shift in recent years in public opinion towards removing these restrictions and to bring the law in Northern Ireland into line with other parts of the UK and international human rights standards, and efforts by the Department of Justice and subsequently the Human Rights Commission to embark on legislative reform towards decriminalisation of abortion in specific circumstances, much work remains to be done. Our devolved authorities need to redress historical inequality, discrimination, limited choices and restrictive freedoms for the region's women and girls. In failing to live up to international human rights obligations, the UK government is also responsible for the human rights violations experienced by women and girls in Northern Ireland who seek abortion services. And this report, as you'll see, concludes with recommendations which outlines what our devolved authorities and the government of the UK must do to ensure a society that respects and upholds sexual and reproductive rights instead of restricting and repressing them. And before I go to our panel, I'll leave you with this quote from a 25-year-old student who had to travel to England. I would ask those in power to please change the law and make it fair and to bring Northern Ireland in line with the rest of the UK. I would ask them to make it okay for women to ask for an abortion and not to be made to feel like our reasons are frivolous and self-serving. Thank you.